Donnelly, Senator Adams, Senator Parnell, Senator Phillips. The bill that we have back before us today is a CS for SB 350. None of us have seen it yet today, none of us at the table, so I would ask someone to come up and explain what the differences was between what we had and what we got now. Senator Parnell.
Senator Green really going to make her husband sit through all this? Well, welcome.
Okay, your call. And so, good morning, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jeff Bush, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Commerce and Economic Development. I'm pleased to tell you that the Department of Commerce and Economic Development went back, sat down, and spent a significant amount of time working with the representatives from the Alaska Visitors Association. And before you is a draft proposed CS that we hope that we all compromised on. We think it's acceptable to, we know it's acceptable to the state. The AVA's representatives find it acceptable. They are still polling some of their members, I guess is one way to put it, but they find it to be a reasonable compromise and believe that it will be no problem, and we all are encouraging this bill to move today. Let me give you the real fast overview of what this bill proposes to do. I think it reaches the concerns of both sides on this. First of all, what this bill proposes to set up is a structure where the division or the Department of Commerce will be appropriated in a contractual, as part of a contractual line item every year, money that will be used for the marketing program. Then the state, through the Division of Tourism and the Department of Commerce, would essentially put onto the table all of the items that they want to have done in a tourism marketing program. We all agree that a very large percentage of that is going to be done as a large marketing program, but there may be pieces. The example I've used in the past is the Tourism North program that the state specifically wants covered in a tourism program. This will be put on the table, and we have to offer, the state has to offer this to the Qualified Trade Association as under the contract if they meet the match. They can do all of the program if they want to and match all of it. If they don't want to do pieces of the program for one reason or another, for example, if they don't want to do tourism marketing in Korea, which we do right now, they can say, we're not going to do the Korea part of the program, and then we won't match that part of the program, and you can retain the right to do that either internally or you can find another contractor to do that. But they will have a right of first refusal on all tourism-related contracts that the state lets. And so that is the way the program is proposed to operate in this bill. There was a request from the senators that the match be raised in the bill to equal the amount put forth in the New Millennium Plan, and that is done. This bill raises the match requirement to 60% after 3 years from the private sector. If you like, Mr. Chairman, I can go through it section by section and show the changes. Like this committee, we just saw this for the first time in final form this morning because legislative drafters have had it and just got done with it just before the committee hearing this morning. But they were working off of a rough draft that we had done yesterday and I think was actually distributed to the committee earlier, the one that we had done, and so the changes to that are relatively minor and technical. They found some problems we had created inadvertently.
You're referring to the L draft?
The L draft is the new one as of this morning, yes.
Questions from committee members at this time on the... Yes.
I would move that we had dropped the L draft for CS Senate Bill 350 Finance.
There's been a motion to adopt the L draft CS dated 5/2/98. Cook, is there any objection? So ordered. Now, it's on the table for discussion.
Is anybody else to testify?
I don't.
Sounds like there's consensus, but I want to hear it.
Sounds plug what?
Sounds like expensive, but I want to...
No, no, no. Is there anyone here from AVA or anyone here that wishes to discuss it or not, or to dispute what has been said so far? Come on to the table, please. I think it gives us a little more comfort if we hear all sides' versions and comments on the draft, since we are looking at it also for the first time. So, good morning.
Morning. My name is Bob Engelbrecht. I appeared before you the other day. I'm past president of the Alaska Visitors Association. I'm currently on the board, and I'm not here to dispute anything that's been said so far.
North Bill, right?
Yes, we met with the administration on Thursday, actually Wednesday and Thursday, and as Jeff characterized it, to you, we reached large areas of agreement. This is a compromise bill. We are comfortable with having this move forward. I believe you have a letter from Tina Lindgren,
yep,
the executive director. I think that pretty accurately characterizes where we're at on this. I would say that I think, as all of you are aware, we went through an exhaustive process of working with our members and others in the visitor industry. This bill does make some changes to some of the basic tenets that we had come to, but we think that this is a reasonable compromise, and as I said, we're comfortable with it moving forward.
Senator Parnell.
Couple questions, but the first one's regarding the right of first refusal at page 3, lines 21 to 25. Qualified trade association that has been awarded a tourism marketing contract has, while the contract is in effect, the right of first refusal for any other tourism-related contract. I'm concerned about those words, while the contract is in effect, because it seems like you would want to give them the right of first refusal as part of this deal, but if they have that for the entire length of the contract, there's not a set time period within which they have to let you know in time to put out the bid to another qualified trade association, et cetera. I mean, this effectively makes a right of first refusal a right to have the contract forever. In my view, because you're not going to want to let the contract lapse, go out the bid, and then how does that work? Maybe I'm not seeing it correctly.
Mr. Chairman, I can respond to that. The way this is envisioned, and I think this is the way it works, is the section before requires a contract with a qualified trade association, assuming that there is one and one comes forward willing to make the match. It requires the state to enter into this major marketing contract. Then the right of first refusal comes up when, for example, somewhere midterm in the contract, there's a decision made that the Division of Tourism, I'm just going to throw this as an example, would like to see a TV ad on the Marine Highway System. What we would have to do is we would have to go to the Qualified Trade Association at that time, because the other contract's still in effect, and offer it to them to produce this commercial, as provided they come up with 60% match. So that's what the while the contract is in effect language is all about.
For any other tourism.
It's for any
contract.
Right.
And this does not extend to the initial contract with the Qualified Trade Association? It just extends to other contracts?
It essentially extends to all contracts. I mean, the original contract is, in a sense, a right of first refusal, because we have to go to them up front and offer them the contract.
But for a period of time, right?
For a year. It's on an annual basis.
They have the right of first refusal to extend that contract or just any other tourism-related contract?
I would say the answer is they don't have a right of first refusal to extend it, because if there were, in fact, two qualified trade associations in a particular year, which I don't think we've envisioned, I don't think the bill exempts that particular contract from procurement, but it doesn't prevent us from going through some limited solicitation process. If there were two qualified trade associations at the beginning of the year, and say, you know, which one of you are willing to come forward with a proposal.
the right of first refusal language anywhere else in here besides this page 3, lines 21 through 25?
No, okay. That's it.
But, I mean, as I read that, the right of first refusal extends to any other tourism-related contract.
Correct.
Not to although we all presume that this is the only qualified trade association that there is.
And given that, and given the match requirements and the raising of money requirements to play the game, it'd be very difficult for another qualified trade association to come forward.
Okay, thank you.
Questions? Mr. Torsman. Page 4, line 7. The word if. We went through a little drill here the other day about my concerns mainly about the association not making this list available after we make a substantial investment into the marketing council. And now you've, in all our drafts, we've had language that was agreed upon and adopted by the committee. Now you're saying that if you decide to sell it, you'll let everybody into the market. I have a real problem with the word if. That still leaves the control of the board of this qualified trade organization to say yes or no on selling any list. And that's not my intent. So if you could respond to that.
Mr. Chairman, Leonard Torgerson, I have to first of all apologize, but this language was put in by drafters taking the original language that was adopted by the committee the other day and trying to rework it somewhat. But as it reads right now, it says if they sell the right to use a mailing list, the list must be made available to every person at the same price, plus an add-on if you're not a participant.
I understand that, but they could also tell a non-member that they're not selling the list, but provide the list to members. And they could just say you have to belong in order to get it, and we're not selling the list, we're selling membership. That's not acceptable, the way that's written. It's hurt to me. Also, one other question.
I think I can correct that if you'd like an amendment from.
Well, I'm going to have time to read this before I leave the vote to pass it out, because I'm finding other things in here. That there was an amendment number 6 that I had that said that the materials produced return back to the state of Alaska after the contract was over. Is that apparently wasn't looked at, or you guys didn't want to do that, or what?
Mr. Chairman, that was dealt with by a change made in page 4, line 3, 4, 5, where we made all the materials joint property of the Qualified Trade Association and the division. The feeling was once it was joint property that the state would have it. If the contract ever ended, we'd have a right to it because it would be ours.
Thank you. Other comments? Questions? I will point out that this starts at 30%. Where it's at and stays at 30% until 3 years down the road, there's no stair stepping. I think it'd be difficult to stair step it on this CS because of section 6 and 7. You'd have to add other sections to stair step it. So it gets would get a little complicated. Not that it's that complicated, but that leaving at 30 slipped back from where we were at the last CS is all I want to point out to the committee. So. Senator Torgerson,
is your intent to pass this out today?
If we don't pass it out today, I think the bill's dead, frankly. I don't know how it gets out and over there. I mean, I'm just saying, I don't know when we get back to it. with what the demands are by the leadership on what we've got to get out of here, and we're getting important bills finally trickling up from other committees that we're going to have to act on.
Great.
So, the commissioner had a fix to my problem on line 7, and maybe I'll have him say what that is, and maybe I can offer an amendment to take care of that.
Chairman, Senator Torgerson, I think the problem lies in the word sells, and I think that if you changed it to provides, it would, if the Qualified Trade Association provides the right to use a mailing list generated under the contract, the list must be made available to every person at the same price. If it's free, it's the same price, except that then there's a participant charge And that's the language that was adopted by the committee that was somewhat difficult to draft the other day, that allows a charge based upon a pro rata percentage of the participation fee to non-members. So I think the word sells may be the issue, and changing it would fix it.
So that word would have, you're suggesting it be changed to something like provides or something like that?
Correct.
Well, Senator Torgerson's got to be the one that gets comfortable with this, not me.
I'm a lot more comfortable with that, and we can work on it when it gets over to the House, too. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we, on line 7, or page 4, line 7, we delete the word sells and insert the word provides.
There has been an amendment, and that would be amendment number 1, to CS that will be on page 4, line 7, deletes the word sell and inserts the word provides. Any objection to that amendment? Amendment's been adopted without objection. Senator Parnell.
Entertain a motion to move the bill from the committee. Or did you have an amendment? Do you have another? Oh, okay.
I had a question on an amendment on another version, and I think it was answered very well.
Senator Parnell.
Chairman, I would move CS for SB number 350 finance as amended from committee with individual recommendations.
Are there any objections? So the bill moves out with individual recommendations, and my only comment is there. Sure, there will be some attempts on the floor to change that minimum 30%. Not by me, but some of the ones that I know. So,
60.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
There will have to be a fiscal note, and we have drafted one. And I'm sorry, it hasn't been distributed yet. We have it. Obviously, there's a fiscal impact when the state's no longer getting program receipts from this program, but in fact contracting it out. So there's going to be a fiscal impact.
We'll have to have that before we can read it across the Senate floor. So maybe we can get that, give it to the Senate Secretary or to Larry, and they'll match it up and forward it down to the Secretary of the Senate.
So there's nothing else we need to do.
Thank you. Beg your pardon?
This completes anything we need to do.
Yeah. Subject to the fiscal note being provided with that. Okay. Today, I thank the committee for meeting this morning to get that consideration of that bill. We will, after the floor session, we'll call the chair, we'll come back and take up SB 352, Authorization for International Airport Revenue Bonds. I understand that there are people in town testify on this, as well as agency people. Some of us have received more indoctrination on this bill than others. So we will hear that bill until about, well, I don't know, but 1 o'clock we're going to start capital budget. So if we want a little break between, we'll play it by ear if we want to get a sandwich in between. But we'll start, hopefully we start before 11 o'clock on this. I don't think the floor session is going to take that long. I haven't seen anything except to read a few bills for us.
It'll take 5 minutes.
So by between 10:30 and 11, it's in 10.
I got a half-hour special order speech.
C-352.
Tomorrow,
special order speech. And the schedule on the capital budget will be thus.
It'll be a cold day.
CS is still to be flopped in front of us at the table. We will start with the agencies going through the CS. Questions from committee members. We went through the public comment process. Questions from committee members to the agencies as we proceed through. Then tomorrow will be amendment day, and I'd ask that all amendments be into the Senate Secretary no later than 10 o'clock in the morning. We will start the meeting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and start markup on the amendments and see how it goes. With that, and that's all we'll have for today, the rest of the day and tomorrow. That was it. We're reading. Senate Finance to order. Members present, Senator Donnelly, Senator Adams, Senator Phillips, Senator Sharp. We have SB 352 in front of us. We'd like to take testimony from the public on this bill. This is the first time we've heard the bill. Some committee members would like the presentation and comments from people involved. This is a Senate bill, you know.
That's why we have to take care of
this. This is a Senate bill.
To be home.
That's right.
In
Anchorage. I would call it.
Purchases. This is a Senate bill, isn't it?
Finances back in order. We have the Senate bill in front of us. We do have Representative Cowdery and his staff and Senator Ward, who has been tracking, actually working on the other body's bill on this, and we would ask them to make comments on this to start out.
Thank
so with that, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and I would like to turn it over to the Senate Transportation staff, Lydia Jones, at this point. Lydia?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I would like to read the sponsor statement for Senate Bill 352, an act relating to international airport revenue bonds.
Okay.
Senate Bill 352 amends the statutory bonding limit for the state of Alaska to sell international airport revenue bonds. The current limit is $100,825,000. This bill changes the limit to $280 million. The difference between the old amount and the new amount is $179.1 million, which is the amount of new debt proposed to finance passenger terminal improvements at Anchorage International Airport. This increased bonding authority is only one component of the financing for proposed airport improvements. Another component included federal highway funds for curbside improvements and a surface transportation access corridor. A third component is federal airport funding for ramp and airside improvements. The bonding cap contained in this bill is $25 million less than a similar bill introduced by the governor. This bill contemplates an additional $25 million in federal funding. Consequently, we can reduce the amount the state needs to borrow. By taking the $25 million off the table, it will not be available to expand the project. The $179-plus million in proposed terminal improvements represents the single largest public works project the state has ever undertaken. The wisdom of taking on such a high amount of debt and whether the International Airport Revenue Fund can afford the debt remains to be proven in the committee hearing process. Several of the small air carriers have expressed concern that the proposed project is too big. They voted against it, but they lost. Still, their concerns may be valid, and we owe it to them to make the project no more expensive than is necessary. This bill is also notable for what it does not include. It differs from the governor's bill in that it does not change the statutes to allow for undefined brokerage fees and unspecified obligations to be charged against the IARF. Additionally, Senate Bill 352 requires the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to submit an advanced fiscal year spending plan to to the legislature by January 1st each year of the project. It should also be noted, Mr. Chairman, that this bill is identical to CSHB 432, which was Representative Cowdery's bill. And on the House side, this bill had five hearings amounting to over 9 hours of testimony. A multitude of questions concerning plans and financing for the airport expansion project were asked by the International Trade and Tourism Committee, and those questions were answered in writing by the Department of Transportation. That information is contained in the three volumes behind me, and I have that available for the committee's review. Also, it should be noted that every effort has been taken to assure that many aspects of this project will be contracted to local contractors, and that is on the record from DOT. And 10% of the Anchorage workforce is airline-related, so this would be a substantial project in terms of local labor. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to introduce Mr. Cliff Argue, who is the Vice President for Properties and Facilities of Alaska Airlines.
First of all, Representative Cowdery, did you want to make any comments?
No, I just had to hear, and if there's any questions of my staff that need to be answered that can't be answered, my staff would be
Mr. Chairman,
available.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, did you want the three volumes of backup material now to go?
Just have them available for committee members, if you would, please. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Clifford Argue. I'm Staff Vice President of Properties and Facilities for Alaska Airlines, and I also serve as Chairman of the Anchorage Fairbanks Airlines Airport Affairs Committee, an organization which is comprised of some 25 airlines who have signed lease and operating agreements with one or both of the international airports. I'm speaking today in favor of Senate Bill 352, which will authorize the issuance of revenue bonds to fund the much-needed expansion of the domestic terminal at Anchorage International Airport. There are three areas of focus in my testimony: the process, the project, and of course, special interest to this committee, the payments. First, I'd like to discuss the process. Last November, the airlines voted in accordance with the agreements each has executed and longstanding past practice to approve the financing and construction of the proposed terminal redevelopment project at Anchorage, with a total estimated cost of $191 million. During this voting process, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities pledged an additional $26.5 million in federal highway funds to the project, leaving a net total of $164.5 million. The vote also approved the Alaska International Airport System, AIAS, to issue airport revenue bonds in an amount necessary to cover this new net project cost, plus financing and escalation, with the understanding that AIAS would continue to use its best efforts to obtain alternate sources of funding and financing to reduce airline cost exposure. We hope but are not certain at this time that there will be additional federal airport improvement program funds available to help in this regard. I believe that you've already been provided details of the actual vote, so I will not restate them here. Having been involved for some nearly 30 years in the planning and development of airport terminal facilities, I can tell you that the work done to date on the Anchorage project is among the most thorough and professional of such efforts I've seen. The needs assessment, the conceptual solutions, and the financing plan were all carefully developed by an expert team of airport staff and consultants. There was excellent coordination with the airlines at every step in the process as we participated in numerous meetings and reviews. My colleagues from a number of other airlines, including Revolution, Linden, Northwest, United, Delta, Reno, America West, Federal Express, and United Parcel Service, all share this feeling on the quality of the process and support for this project. I might mention that last week I served on a panel at the annual economic conference of the Airports Council International, which is a large trade association of airports throughout the world. Its meeting was held in San Francisco. This session was co-sponsored by the Air Transport Association, which is made up of the scheduled domestic airlines in the United States, as well as some international carriers. And one of the focuses was on airline-airport relationships. While we heard about some very difficult situations around the country between airlines and airports, I was pleased that I could point to the Anchorage experience as a model for good cooperation, resulting in a project that was eventually endorsed by the airlines. With respect to this project, the serious deficiencies in the existing Anchorage domestic terminal are well known, both as documented in the studies and certainly experienced at one time or another by each of you when traveling or meeting someone who is. The plan to remedy these shortcomings, as well as accommodate forecast growth between now and the year 2005, is sound and it's conservative. It will provide the citizens of Alaska and the many visitors from outside a modern, efficient, and functional airport terminal serving the largest city and air transportation hub of the state. It will allow passengers flying out of Anchorage to use the newest technologies to speed their progress through the terminal. I might mention that we at Alaska Airlines are especially excited about this opportunity to offer better customer service as quickly as possible through a greater use of new technologies. Finally, and probably the most important consideration, is the payment, the financing. As you consider this legislation, I would urge that you give the Alaska International Airport System maximum flexibility to issue the bonds necessary for the project all at one time and immediately. This is the most cost-effective way to proceed rather than trying to split it up, phase it, or otherwise delay it. These bonds will be backed by airport revenues generated from rates, fees, and charges to the airlines, concessionaires, and others benefiting from the airport. These proposed revenue bonds in no way impact the state's general fund, nor will they harm the ability for either Anchorage or Fairbanks airports to continue to develop other necessary capital improvements using already established funding mechanisms. The additional cost to the airlines, when considered on a cost per passenger basis, is modest, and the airlines are ready to pay. The AIAS proposal is prudent and reasonable in funding much needed improvements to one of the major economic engines of the state. By comparison, this is a small project to what is being done throughout almost the entire rest of the country. Just on the West Coast, for example, there are projects on the books at Seattle for $1.7 billion. San Francisco International has a project underway of about $2.7 billion. Portland is probably over $800 million now, and it goes on and on and on. Some of these projects are far more complex and far more expensive, obviously, than what is being proposed at Anchorage. This is a project whose time has come. The need is overdue, and it's well justified. I request your favorable action today on Senate Bill 352 to allow this important work to move ahead in a timely and complete fashion. Thank you for the opportunity to comment to this committee this morning. I'd like to also add that, in addition to Ron Lance from United, who will speak in just a minute, that Denny Bird, who is the general manager for Federal Express in the state of Alaska, was unable to be with us either in person or by teleconference today, but he asked that I advise this committee of the full support of Federal Express, a major tenant at Anchorage International Airport, for this project. At this point, I would like to introduce Mr. Lance of United Airlines to offer additional comments, or if the committee would like to ask questions at this time, I would be pleased to answer them.
Any questions by committee members at this time? Go ahead, Mr. Lance.
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ron Lance. I'm the general manager for United Airlines in Anchorage. In January of 1997, United Airlines had approximately 45 employees in Alaska. We now have 225 employees living mostly in Anchorage. This represents a significant investment in the Alaskan economy, as well as our confidence in the state to support our growth. Our present operations are approximately 25% passenger-related and 75% cargo-related. It is our intent to expand our cargo operations in the near future. The present facilities are inadequate to support further expansion in both areas and needs to be corrected. From United's perspective, it would have been helpful if the proposed Anchorage International Airport expansion plan, which this bill before you today supports, had been passed 3 years ago with the facilities coming online now. Others will testify about the need for the facilities, and there is no question about this need from United's point of view. The facility at this point simply does not fit the size of the passenger and cargo traffic going through Anchorage International Airport. It is important to stress the fairness of the process by which the expansion plans were decided. United is an employee-owned airline which, as policy matter, attempts to move decisions down to the lowest possible level. That same type of policy was followed here. All of the airlines that were involved had a chance to participate in the decision-making process. The Airport Affairs Technical Committee reviewed the plans and reduced them from as many as 15 concepts down to one. There was a lot of give and take during that process and more give and take to come up with the final plan. In short, everyone had a say, and a compromise solution was reached by the airlines that will ultimately pay for the project. This bill needs to move this year. The market could not be better for the type of proposal we are making. More delay will result in more triple parking around gates and problems for passengers and cargo customers as well. United strongly urges that the committee move this bill as soon as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be prepared to take any questions.
Questions? I have a question. Senator Phillips.
I assume this is not a unanimous decision, right, by the airline? So who opposes it?
You may want to ask Mr. Plum that, or maybe you can answer it.
Senator, there were several carriers that did vote against the project. I might explain the way the operating agreement works for Anchorage and Fairbanks airports, and that is that in order for a project to not pass, it requires two-thirds of the signatories to vote against the project. That did not happen. The actual list of the project, of the carriers that voted against it, was, I'll get it here in a minute, bear with me. There were several of the international carriers, the long-haul carriers, and then several of the smaller carriers that voted no on the project. There were 10 votes in favor, 12 votes against. However, I might mention that the positive votes that came for the project represent some 85% of the carriers operating in the domestic terminal and the ones that will be most heavily affected by the project.
Thank you. Could you read the names of the international carriers that voted no?
Yes, I can, Senator Pierce. There were negative votes that came from Asiana Airlines, Cathay Pacific Airlines, China Airlines, just the international if you wanted to hear, Japan Airlines, Korean Airlines, Lufthansa, Nippon Cargo, and those were the international carriers.
I would just remind the committee that those are the very same people who are getting the, who won't get the tax because we passed the bill to make sure that that international tax thing.
I'd like to know the domestics also who voted against it.
The domestic carriers that voted no on the project were Era Aviation, Evergreen International, Northern Air Cargo, Peninsula Air, And Revolution, however, Revolution voted in favor of the, or made a statement on their ballot that if the alternate source of funding, passenger facility charges, was included in the project, they would vote yes. And they have written several letters saying that they strongly endorse the project. They just had a concern about the funding mechanism. I believe that they sent Senator Ward a letter just a couple of weeks ago.
There's one in here.
Unequivocally supporting the project and asking that it's I had that letter earlier. Perhaps that's in your packet, Senator.
We've got to read it. Ask Mr. Lance, Representative, or Senator Pierce, do you have another, any other questions?
No, sir.
Question of Mr. Lance. The figures quoted that other airports are using for expansion, although they're impressive, they don't relate to a city of 250,000 either, or a region of 600,000 total population. And I know most of the trade coming through there as far as cargo is international, so that the unique position we're in, thank God. But what, how much, I just don't want to get into a DIA syndrome here that all of a sudden the rates go up so high, United's the only one paying a bill at the airport. Because United pulled out of my town, so I don't want to pull out of Anchorage either. What's this bill?
Senator, although I don't know the exact, you know, the exact percentage, but landing fees and lease costs are actually a very small part of our overall cost of doing business.
I'll ask DOT what they anticipate, or Mr. Plum, what they anticipate the lease rates to go up to finance this debt over above what they're currently paying. I think I've seen that before on projections, but as I recall, some of the airports that did have massive improvements, they lost a lot of their business of the smaller airlines because they couldn't afford to pay the increased costs. And what concerns me is the ones that voted against it are the intra-Alaska carriers that carry probably 90% of the intra-Alaska, other than Alaska Airlines, intra-Alaska. And the, I think you just testified that Reeves' caveat was, let me get that clear, was Reeves' caveat, they don't say it in this letter, that the bonds redeemed through fees paid by airport users, do they also mean that that would be the passenger service
in there
that may or may not be added?
Mr. Chairman, in their initial ballot, that was the caveat that they put on there. Subsequently, with the letter, the April 15th letter, I believe, that you have in front of you to Senator Ward, they did not specify that as a condition of their approval.
I think anyone believes that that passenger service charge will not come into being after $250 million worth of new financing is naive. I think it will be part of the financing scheme after it all shakes out. And what concerns me is a $3 charge on a $30 trip down to Kenai or Homer is a hell of a lot more than a $3 charge to go to San Francisco. So percentage-wise, it's a pretty big increase in cost for the small hops, although Juneau just excluded them over charging that fee over so many miles on small hop. But that is a significant impact on the short haulers. And I know it's not in this financing plan, but believe me, I will bet dollars to donuts it'll be there before the whole thing shakes out. Any other questions or comments from these two? Thank you. I appreciate you coming down and
thank you,
talking to us again on this. Do we have any other industry people that's here that wants to testify?
I think we have Mr. Merlis of the Air Transport Association on.
Let's see. Yeah, I don't have him on the sign-up list, but if Mr. Merlis, oh, he's on the teleconference. Okay. Let's go to Mr. Merlis. He's D.C. on online for SB 352. Are you still there, Mr. Merlis?
Oh, yes, I am, sir.
Why don't you go ahead and...
And if you do not choose to stay online for the whole testimony, at least we get your input.
Thank you, sir.
Go ahead.
I'm Edward Merla, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for the Air Transport Association. ATA is the principal trade and service organization of the U.S. flag airline industry. Our members transport more than 95% of the passengers and cargo shipped on U.S. flag airlines. We'd like to focus our comments on two things. First, we believe that the process that's been followed at Anchorage will serve as a hallmark of what airport expansion projects in cooperation with airlines should be. Throughout the country, we are engaged in efforts to control the cost and scope of airport expansions by local government or airport authorities. Far more often than not, these are field of dreams proposals which have been designed in many respects to accomplish more from the standpoint of building monuments than commerce. It's clear from our observation and our members' participation in the Anchorage process that that is not the case in Anchorage. This project has been sized well, it is priced prudently, and it is financed conservatively. We have joined with our members in urging the prompt and expeditious consideration of the legislation to finance the project. And I'd like to raise one other reason for the prompt consideration of this measure. 1998 will be a year in which the airport improvement program, the federal airport improvement program, will be reauthorized. During the reauthorization period, there is tremendous opportunity for ensuring that sufficient funds are made available for the inclusion of the Anchorage project. If we miss the opportunity in 19, and we do not know now whether this will be a one-year or a two-year or a three-year reauthorization, there may be more difficulty in obtaining what probably figures to be at least $25 million of federal money for the Anchorage expansion. So we urge you to move promptly and expeditiously in Juneau, and I can assure you that on behalf of the carriers, we will put our shoulders to the grindstone in Washington, making sure there is sufficient money in the AIP program to cover the anticipated federal cost of the Anchorage expansion program. Chairman, I think that the representatives of the carriers, Mr. Argument and Lance, you have this room are far more conversant with the specifics than I am, but I'll be happy to answer it. Would you remember
the questions for committee members? Not at this time. I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I guess I'll go down the list in order of sign-up unless someone wants to relinquish to someone else and testify later. Next, I have Mort Plum.
Sir, I'm only here to answer questions.
Okay. Just a lot of questions. Okay. I guess I would call you up to ask you the question that I had on the leasing, what the projected curve on the increase of lease cost is in the financial plan, on the repayment plan, since the revenues are going to come from leaseholders and fees. You probably testified to the other committees on the same thing, but we haven't heard you, so.
Yes, sir. I'm Mort Plum, Director of Anchorage International Airport. And, sir, could you restate the question for me, please?
I was wondering if you could tell us what the projected percentage increase over existing fees and leases would be to finance the proposed improvements covered in this plan once the total plan has been accomplished. I think your financial plan had probably somewhere in there what the proposed fees, how they would have to be increased to pay the debt service.
Yes, sir. I believe in the two volumes that has been provided to the committee, that information is included in there. On page 5 of a handout, which I believe we've given to all the committee members, there is a short synopsis. And while I don't have the percentages, we do go from an approximate $32.97 in 1999 to around $41.75 in the year 2010. I'm not sure what that percentage is exactly. It is less than, looks like maybe 30% there, but I'd prefer to have someone do that with a calculator. But $32.97 in 1999. And in the financial model that was provided to the committee, it's $41.75 in 2010. And
about 25%. 25% looks like. And the plan at this stage does not have built into it any passenger, what do you call them, passenger loading fees or passenger departure fees or?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's passenger facility charges, and the proposal that is before you today does not include any passenger facility charges in the financing plan.
Now or in the future?
The plan, Senator Phillips, that we have presented today just addresses the current plan. It does not address the future use of PFCs.
Okay. Any other questions of Mr. Plum at this time? Okay. Why don't you stay at the table? I'll call Kurt to the...
Yes, sir.
I'm here too, and the reason I call him Kurt Parkin is because I don't know, recall who was, I know it's DOT, but I don't know which part, when they, I think, floated the idea of a passenger's facility charge out here a year or so ago. What was the anticipation of revenue to be generated on that? Do you recall annually?
It, Mr. Chairman, Kurt Parkin, Deputy Commissioner, DOT, it seemed that for Anchorage Airport, was anticipated to generate about $5 million annually.
Okay.
And as you recall, there was considerable concern about PFCs expressed, and the department withdrew its consideration of PFCs.
What would be the procedures or authority to institute one? How does that happen? Does that happen by regulation? Does that happen by statute? Does that happen by the authority, International Airport Authority, or how does that happen?
Mr. Chairman, the process is, it's a, the airport would collect the passenger facility charges after going through a process of identifying a project that the PFCs would be used for, consulting with the carriers who would be having to collect the fee, presenting an application to the FAA. There's a public process that's involved with that process. And then FAA would approve the collection of the PFCs. The city of Juneau has just implemented a PFC, and they'll start collecting them in July. Now, the legislature, of course, would have to approve of the collection and the expenditures of the funds for the project. So the legislature would be involved in terms of approving of the project as well. So there would be no collection of a PFC and the spending of the PFC on a project without legislative involvement.
Okay, so are you saying that even if the fees were collected by the Anchorage International Airport or the Alaska International Airport system, that those fees would still have to be appropriated by the legislature?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. And how long is anticipated these bonds will be for duration of how many years? 20 years or what?
25 years.
25 years.
25?
25 years.
Okay, so
I guess what I'm getting at is a possible cost shift here of $125 million in this, by the passenger facility charge to the passengers from the airlines leasing facilities, if in fact that would happen. Just in simple math, I don't know what it would be, but it would be $5 million bucks a year for 25 years could result in a cost shift to the passengers and thereby be pledged to the project and not reflected in the lease payments. Is that a possibility? As the project develops before it's finalized, things get revised down the road as far as revenue streams and so forth. We're authorizing the bond issue, and I don't think we're ratifying anything else.
Mr. Chairman, you are correct. This bill is just the authorization for the bond, and PFCs can be used to repay a portion of the debt payments. So if PFCs were implemented, that's how they would be used. And while we were proposing $5 million, we expected $5 million of revenue last year when we were looking at the PFCs. We have since been working with the FAA to see if there's a way of coming up with a PFC program that reflects the unique nature of Alaska. And in doing so, the FAA is looking at exempting certain portions of the state from having to pay the PFCs. And by exempting people, you reduce the revenues consequently. And so we don't have an estimate of what we would be collecting in the future if we had a PFC program, but it would be less than the $5 million that we would have collected if we had charged it for everybody.
Once again, for me, I'm a little slow learner here. The facilities charge, if it would be imposed, could be imposed by the international system, I mean by the Alaska International Airport.
Mr. Chairman,
with proper public notice, et cetera.
It would be imposed, the sponsor of the airport does the kind of the processing of the application.
I guess what I'm getting at is Fairbanks, would the leasers, the users, be able to vote on that before it would happen?
It would be taken to them for consideration, the air carriers that operate at the airport, and it would be presented to them for their support or lack of support. That interest expressed by the air carriers would then be given to the FAA for their consideration and ultimately approving or denying the passenger facility charge.
But what I'm saying is obviously the majority of the voters are cargo people and they don't give a rat's about passenger service charges. So if they can shift $125 million to passengers, it's probably going to happen if it comes to a vote.
Mr. Chairman,
it takes two-thirds to defeat it.
Mr. Chairman, the operating agreement is different than the process for PFCs, and so it's not a matter of just a majority vote or minority vote.
The practical matter, and the reason the legislature got into the first place, was DOT had to come to us for an RPO to have additional receipt authority to be able to collect the things. So the legislature is going to have a role to play. If we don't give them the receipt authority for the funds, they will never be able to charge the PFCs, no matter who votes yes.
Yeah, we established that we'd have to appropriate the money when we started talking about this. So.
Mr. Chairman, if I might add, too, certainly cargo carriers have a perspective on PFCs. I think that a considerable number of the passenger carriers support the concept of PFC.
Except the smaller short hoppers.
Well, it depends. Clearly, Reeve has stated, as Mr. Argue had mentioned earlier, that they voted against the terminal project because we did not have PFCs. And so they feel, as they've expressed to me in the past, they've got people on staff right now collecting PFCs for folks going outside Seattle and beyond, and they feel that there's no reason why they shouldn't be collecting for Alaska as well. But it is a mix of folks who are supporting it.
Are there questions of the department or the airport personnel at this time? I will note that in the current capital budget, there's $25,150,000 of current capital projects, excluding this project, for Anchorage International Airport.
Mr. Chairman, also with us today, and if you had questions relating to the bonding, Ross Kenny from the Department of Revenue can answer questions that you have. And Dave Eberle, the Director of Construction for Central Region DOT, is here. He's the project manager for this project, and Dave brings with him a lot of experience in big projects. He was the project manager for the Northern Intertie as well as the Bradley Lake project. So he's here available for questions.
Does any committee member wish to hear from the Department of Revenue representatives or the other DOT people at this time? Thank you. Any other members of the public out there didn't get a chance to sign up that wants to testify this morning? Especially out of towners. Thank you. We are. We don't have enough to move it. We are going to stand in recess till 1 o'clock. We'll go to the capital budget.
The federal airport funding, according to the Transportation Committee, is $25 million, will be coming down the pike possibly, and federal highways, which you all know is my heartburn, is $26 million, competing with the rest of the state on ICE-T money to get right up to the front door. That's one thing I'd like to call Kurt Parkin back at the table on before we do anything with it. Kurt, in the STIP, out to the year 2001, current STIP, are the ramps still in the STIP, which are a very expensive part of the 20, was an expensive part of the $26 or $30 million of ICE-T money?
Mr. Chairman, there is a portion that is in the STIP. I think it was about a little over $26 million piece. We'd be requesting funding.
Last presentation I had included right at the ramps, road improvement, the International Airport road improvement coming into the airport, some improvements around the other parts of the airport for access to some of the improved areas. But my main concern was even tearing down the existing ramps and replacing the ramping and access to the parking area with not with bonding money, but with ICE-T money. That's Is that still in the STIP?
Mr. Chairman, yes, there is a portion that is still in STIP, and we would be requesting authorization next year for a piece of that. With ICE-T, intermodalism was promoted, and this the International Airport Road is part of the NHS, goes up to the terminal, and qualifies for funding from federal highways, and so that's why it's included.
Do you recall what the total National Highway allocation of the total ICE-T money is for statewide? $180 million, wasn't it once? I don't know what it is under the new law that hasn't passed.
Well, we're 200, let's see, over $200 million.
It was 140.
Well, right now, Mr. Chairman, we're restricted to, because they only gave us partial funding for this year, but our normal is over $200 million. The new reauthorization, we're expecting it to be upwards to $300 million.
Okay, thank you. So what we have before us is the Senate Transportation Committee's version of House Bill, the original bill, 352, which calls for an increase of bonding authority of $179 million, roughly. Senator Dodd.
Chairman, if there's no further public testimony, I'd move Senate Bill 352, the Senate Transportation Committee version from committee with individual recommendations with any accompanying fiscal notes.
And I will object. Please call the roll.
Senator Adams? Senator Parnell?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
Yes.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Torgerson? Senator Beard?
Yes.
Senator Sharp?
No. The bill passes out of committee with individual recommendations on a vote of four yeas and one nay. Senator Donner.
Chairman, for the record, I want to say that I share your concern about the structure of the STIP and the inclusion of the ramp project being in the STIP. I think that's something the administration should be on notice that may not be approved by the legislature next year for the STIP because it's probably more appropriately with the airport costs. And just so you can take that message back to Governor of the Department of Transportation.
I'd just add that on the meeting I had and the briefing I had in December with the airport personnel, DOT, and their bonding person, I asked that question of how many other airport authorities used ICE-T money to get right up the front door on their ramping and their access to parking, and they said one that he was aware of, and that was Dulles Airport in D.C. So that's part of my aggravation. With that, is there anything else to come for the committee before we recess to 1 o'clock? With that, we are recessed. Thank you.